And this is our number
two. It's time for the fastest 15 minutes in the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
Ah, it's a world of news in a tidy little 15-minute package just for you. I have a wonderful idea for the city of Seattle. I just saw a story this morning about Rite Aid pharmacies around the country. They have been plagued with, like every business, particularly bad around here, Rite Aid has been plagued with vagrant bums hanging out in their doorways. And so they have come up with a corporate strategy to try to drive the vagrant bums away. Barry Manilow.
They fell in love.
Yeah. And I'll tell you something right now. Barry Manilow's a great artist. In fact, we were having a little debate before. I got to stop the music for this. So we're deciding which Barry song. Because I told you about seeing Barry Manilow at the fabulous Mirage Hotel Casino, Las Vegas, Nevada, many, many years ago. He's a fantastic showman, has an amazing catalog of music. He's a great performer. People can goof on him all they want, but you know who the goof is? It's the goofers. So anyway, we're trying to decide, well, Rite Aid is going to play Barry Manilow to try to drive homeless people away from their stores. And we go, what Barry song should we play? I go, well, Copacabana's kind of annoying among his songs. And Nicole has the audacity to say, well, everyone hates Mandy.
Well, I mean, you hate to hear it over and over again. You might be okay with it once, and you're like, oh, that's precious. But you definitely will hate it after a couple.
No, you were sitting at your desk, and your quote, word for word, everyone hates Mandy. And come on. And what I said is, anybody who hates Mandy is dead inside. You are just a soulless husk of a body walking around if you hate this.
I remember all my life, raining down as cold as ice.
I don't know why you would hate Copacabana.
But compared to this. So anyway, here's my great idea for the city of Seattle. If this Rite Aid pharmacy strategy works, and Blair, yeah, you see, I think Barry is going to attract people to the stores. I think people are going to come and they'll buy their pharmaceuticals back at the counter, and then they'll sit out front, wave their lighters, and they'll just groove to Barry. But I'm thinking the basic underlying strategy by Rite Aid is intriguing. Because how much would it cost compared to what we're spending on all these shelters and everything else? How much would it cost to just put nice audio speakers on all the light poles around the city? And we would just blare stuff that would drive the homeless vagrant bums. And I'm not talking about the innocent homeless. I still want to help everybody who wants help. I still want to provide treatment and housing and job training for everybody who wants it. But for the vagrant bums who don't want help, let's drive them out. But it's not going to be Manilow. Rite Aid's messed up. So my question for you is, what should be our city music? I'm going to get the city council on the show with me in the next couple of weeks. I'm going to pitch this idea directly to them because I think they know that they're out of ideas. And I know that in their meetings, they say, we got to start listening to Monson. But what music do we need to play to drive the vagrants out of Seattle? What should be blaring on the speakers to clean up the streets?
Someone just said, the Dory Monson Show. Go away.
Part of that makes me laugh, and part of that makes me hate whoever said it. Oh, come on. When Barry takes it up a half note there.
I got a love that. Kenny G?
Oh. Yes. Listen, what was the first one?
Love Shack?
No! Love Shack. B-52s! That's good time. Fun. That's one of my summer tracks.
The Macarena?
How about the song that never ends?
Which one's that?
This is the song that never ends. It keeps... I don't remember the words. It's like, it keeps going, you know.
Sounds like it just ended.
Yeah. I'll find it for you.
What was the one after Love Shack that you said?
Kenny G.
Oh, that would do it. That would do it for me. And I've never met Kenny G, even though we've both been in Seattle forever. I've never met him. I think he's a very
That's
nice.
That's just music, though. Earworm.
Earworm. No, but from everything I've heard, Kenny G's a very nice man. I don't want to disparage him, but.
Yes, it goes on and on, my friend. Some people started singing it, not knowing what it was.
Can you imagine?
And they'll continue
this
singing
is blaring
it
from every light pole in Seattle.
You remember that show with Lamb Chop?
We bring down the music just a skosh.
It's pretty loud.
Sorry about that.
The mix was a little hot. The show Lamb Chop?
No, it's I forget her name, but
oh, Sherry Lewis.
Sherry Lewis, yeah, and Lamb Chop.
Lewis and Lamb Chop.
That's where this song is from.
Oh,
this is a 10-hour loop, by the way.
Put this in Pioneer Square, blare it. That would do it.
No, but you need something that the person that's just walking from home to work can handle. But you can't just sit out there and listen to it all day.
Well, that's
this
Kenny
would
G.
be. No.
That's Kenny G.
Well. I think you need lyrics.
There's also that one song from that movie Mars Attacks that causes all the aliens' heads to blow up at the end. Spoiler alert.
Oh, jeez.
I don't know which one that is. I've never seen the movie, shockingly enough.
What else we got?
We got a lot, man. Okay, you can keep texting us at 98973. Look at this. We're
Sweet Caroline, what?
If you heard that over and over, yeah, that would do it.
Pharrell Williams, Happy.
People are sending Supertramp. How can anybody suggest Supertramp? I would sit and listen to Supertramp for hours on end. The Slim Whitman?
Yeah, this is the song I was talking about from the movie.
Oh. I like Slim Whitman. I loved when the Slim Whitman album... The infomercial for it ran nonstop in the 80s, and it had a line in it, he sold more albums than the Beatles and Elvis combined. I mean, something like that was part of the commercial.
Wow.
But it was like in Belgium or something. I mean, I don't know where it was, but they actually had that in the commercial. See if you can find the Slim Whitman commercial. Either of you? Anybody? Nobody's jumping to it. Now, see if you can find the Slim Whitman commercial, please.
All right.
Because it has a line about he sold more albums than the Beatles and Elvis combined. Oh, this is a good one. Disney, It's a Small World. That would do it. Okay, anyway. We've got
Billy Joel. How do you feel about that?
Joel, get out of here. You know, my show would do it. The person who suggested my show, that would do a couple of things. Everybody walking around with a PPM downtown.
We'd learn something.
We'd pick up the ratings. And we'd clean up the streets.
There we go.
At the same time. So, okay, well, keep those suggestions rolling in on the text line at 98973. Some of these suggestions are awful. My Sharona is a great song. What's wrong with some people?
Mbop would be funny, though. Hanson.
Mbop's a great song. Nobody should disparage Hanson. They're just a bunch of...
Zimbop.
Oh, yeah. I gotta.
Barbie World? Barbie World?
Whatever. I gotta get to some other. Oh, Barbie Girl. That's annoying. I gotta get some other news here, okay? Did anybody find the Slim Whitman commercial yet?
I was looking.
No, you weren't. You were not. That was the slowest response.
I Googled it.
Slowest reaction ever when I asked for that. Okay, see if you can find the Slim Whitman commercial, please. And I will get to some more stories.
What's the commercial for?
For his album.
Last year, 1,400,000 TV viewers ordered this man's albums and tapes and made him a new American recording star.
No heart is darling but mine.
And now to fill the tremendous demand, we proudly offer a brand new album by Slim Whitman, the international star whose heart-touching voice has now captured America.
Making believe.
Is all the magic of Slim Whitman, the star who had the number one record in England for more weeks than even Elvis and the Beatles.
That's the line right there.
There you go.
I had it. I was off a little bit. He had the number one album in England for more weeks than Elvis and the Beatles. That can't be.
I don't know.
That ran nonstop when I was in college.
This is unrelated, kind of, but the Sasquatch Music Festival is ending. And like the Gorge is no longer going to have that music festival.
Right.
And the guy that started it, that was his quote today, was, "We lasted longer than the Beatles." That was part of his press release.
Well, the Beatles didn't last that long. They were only like 8 years.
I was tying it into local news.
They burned bright. Okay, I've got to get some other news here. I'm sorry I'm so distracted today, but it's Friday for crying out loud. Next up in the Fastest 15... we do have a musical little tie-in here because Ed Sheeran is getting sued for $100 million by the estate of Marvin Gaye because they say that Ed Sheeran's song Thinking Out Loud, his biggest hit, is a ripoff of Marvin Gaye's Let's Get It On. So here's a little bit of Ed Sheeran.
When your legs don't work like they used to before, and I can't sweep you off of your feet.
Come on, get to the chorus here. I'm gonna skip ahead.
Darling, I will be loving you till we're 70.
Okay, so that's Ed Sheeran's song. The lawsuit by Marvin Gaye's estate says it has the same melody, rhythms, harmonies, drums, bass line, backing chorus, tempo, syncopation, and looping as...
I've been really trying, baby. Trying to hold back this feeling for so long.
Skip ahead here. You know, it is kind of weird because I've opened both these up and we have the sound files, the audio sound files that has all the peaks and kind of the rhythm of the music in digital form. It's pretty interesting how they do kind of match up. I don't know if it would make any sense if I played them at the same time. I bet it won't.
I was trying.
That sounds horrible.
I was going to say that I tried to do that. But it wasn't really working.
I tried to do it loud. Anyway, so $100 million lawsuit is being filed against Ed Sheeran by the estate for Marvin Gaye.
Maybe that's what they should play downtown Seattle, or those two songs together at the same time.
That would be it. Or the Dory Monson Show, which will do
either
that
way.
Sort of nonsense every once in a while. Okay, should we keep up the musical theme? George Thorogood is going to join us right after the bottom of the hour news. So a rock legend is going to be with us. So now I've not listened to this, but we were going to play this yesterday, but we had some serious breaking news. But this kind of went viral because this contestant on Jeopardy just cleaned up in the Rock Hall of Fame category.
Right.
Okay. So you had this idea, since I haven't heard this, of seeing how I would do versus this guy.
Yes.
Okay. Do you have the audio there?
Yes, I can do that.
Okay.
Ready?
All right. So I'm going to see. This is the guy who ran the table in the Rock Hall. I bet I won't do as well as an expert. I'm not an expert on this stuff. Go ahead.
The Hall is still saving all its love for this 25-time Grammy nominee and her 11 number one hits.
Diana Ross.
Amy?
Who is Mariah Carey?
No. Scott?
Who is Whitney Houston?
Correct.
Oh, shoot. You know, I've done my show twice from the Rock Hall in Cleveland.
Yes, I do know that.
Did you know this twice? You did with me last year.
Well, when you were doing it last time, you said you'd been there before. So, yes, I did.
Back in 95 when the Mariners played the Indians in the playoffs, I did my show from the Rock Hall. Okay, I'm 0 for 1 against this guy.
Rock and Roll Hall of Fame 800.
Are they not men? Then why aren't these
Devo.
New wave pioneers from nearby Akron in the hall?
Who is
Scott?
Devo?
Or Devo.
Good.
Okay.
Okay, you're 1-1.
Rock and Roll 1200.
Are you kidding? These alt-rock legends weren't part of the class of 2018, their first year of eligibility. Andrew?
Who are the Beastie?
Oh.
Beastie Boys.
I
wouldn't have gotten that.
Beastie Boys.
Nope. Oh. Radiohead.
No way
people
would I have gotten that.
People were very upset about him missing that one.
Well, wait. Why is this viral? I thought it was that this guy ran the category.
It's still going.
Well, but no,
Scott,
he missed one.
Do it.
Rock and Roll 1600.
This famously gloomy Robert it's Smith band has been passed over for 14 years. Scott.
What is The Cure?
Oh, I forgot to pause it.
What are you doing?
I forgot to pause.
Come on.
This isn't my normal gig.
This is horrible.
I should start playing those two songs together. That'd be more listenable. Okay, last one. I'm losing.
Oh. Rock and Roll 2000.
Sadly, Lemmy won't be around to accept if and when this Ace of Spades powerhouse is ever inducted.
Lemmy Ace of Spades.
Lenny?
Wait, who's Ace? Yeah, no, I don't know.
Motorhead.
No,
Motorhead?
Yeah. Who'd you? Never mind.
John probably got it.
Scott.
It was Motorhead.
Yep.
Jeez, that was a horrible idea. And I don't have time for any other of these stories here. So that there is your fastest 15.
This has been the fastest 15 minutes in the news. Fast. Stories, fastest 15.
You give us 15 minutes, we'll drive the homeless out of town. The legend, George Thorogood, joins us next on the Dory Monson Show. About a year ago, we had on the great George Thorogood, and he's coming back to town. He'll be at the Emerald Queen Casino coming up on July 8th. You can get tickets at Ticketmaster.com, and let me welcome back to the Dory Monson Show, the legend, George Thorogood. How you doing, George?
Bad.
Yes, you are. Oh, man. I am fascinated by you, George. I had so much fun talking to you last year because we talked about how you did 50 concerts in 50 states in 50 days in your early days, mm-hmm. right? That was
51.
Okay, 51.
We did a doubleheader in Baltimore and D.C.
Oh, there you go. Okay. And you still, 40 years later, 45 years later, you still have the same work ethic. And I'm fascinated by that, George. Where does that come from?
Is that right?
Yeah. Where does that come from? Where's the drive come from still?
I figured out a long time ago, Dory, that this is the business we've chosen. This is the business we're in. And there's like anything else, there's ups and downs to it. There's peaks and valleys. But it's the greatest business you can possibly in. Everybody wants to be a rock star. Everybody wants to be a musician. You know that.
Yeah.
So I figured a long time ago, this is what you do. You might as well enjoy it and put yourself in a thought process that enjoys it. So no matter how rough it gets, you know what's at the end. You're going to be on stage making people happy. And if that's not your motivation, then you should get out of the business.
How old were you when you knew that's what you wanted to do and be?
About 15 or 16.
Is it true that you were a street busker? You were just a street musician in the early days?
Yeah, I did that in San Francisco a couple of months.
It's hard for me to imagine just because of your style of music. Yeah, I think mostly of the kind of folk type singers. And what kind of music were you doing on the street?
I was doing a different kind of music back then. I was playing stuff like Madison Blues, Bourbon Scotch and Beer, you know. I was playing the same stuff then. I shouldn't have been on the street playing like that, but it was the only way I could make a living. And since you know, the president of Capitol Records didn't happen to be in town in San Francisco, I had no representation, and I had no one or myself to be able to present myself with a resume and, you know, to hustle a record deal, which is what I should have been doing during those 2.5 months, not playing on a street corner. Matter of fact, I had people coming to me in San Francisco saying, what are you doing playing on a street corner? Why aren't you playing? Why aren't you making records? And I'd say, well, are you the president of a record label? And the guy'd say, no, I'm an advertising. I'd say, well, then advertise me.
Yeah, that's right. And I know so you.
It was kind of a touchy situation.
Yeah, well, it's worked out okay for you. And you guys did the tour with the Stones in 81. How. I mean, that had to be just mind-blowing to, in a period of, and I know it was several years, and I know there are baby steps in between, but to go from playing on the street corner to opening for the Rolling Stones, that, were you aware of the magnitude, or was it such a gradual progression that it just seemed like a logical next step?
It seemed like a logical next step years before that. Even we didn't have a record in 75, and when they went on the road in 78, we just had one record out. But even in as early as 75, I'd see other bands playing with the Stones, and then 78. And I was thinking, we should have that bill. I was speaking totally professionally. Yeah. We're affordable. I know how to play Chuck Berry. I know how to play Bo Diddley, which is the Stones' roots. I didn't realize that in those days, promoters and the Stones, of course, generally hire bands with how many people you can draw to the show.
Yeah,
it's not like done in a different fashion like it was in the late 60s. Compatible bands had played, and people said, well, this makes sense, this band with this band. But I was still thinking in terms of like 1967 or 68 or 69, but still I was thinking, this is where I belong. So by the time we got there in 81, yes, it was a thrill and everything, but for me it was like it was a few years overdue. It was a few years overdue when I made our first record. You know, I was ready in 73 and 74 to put a record out. It didn't come out till 77. And I was ready to work with the Stones in 78, and that didn't happen. So when it happened in 81, I called our agent and said, you get me this gig or you will never get me another gig ever. Well, that's how that went down.
I'd say it has all worked out fabulously well. The other, and I know you were driven by the music. You know, quite clearly you were driven by the music, but every rock star I've talked to and that I have on my show, they also were getting into it for the girls. Was that part of the motivation for you?
Excuse me?
For the girls.
Ha! So that was the farthest thing from my mind when I was getting into it. My parents, my brother, my sisters, and just about everybody else in the neighborhood said, this is what you have to be doing, Thorogood, because you know you can't work. And they were right. I'm no good at it. I tried. It was terrible. You know, I just, it's not in me.
Right.
You know, and entertainment, especially music entertainment, was. I wasn't real great at it to start with. I had to work at that. But for women, you know, come on, man. You know, you don't think in terms like that. I mean, besides, I think with this mug, you think I'm going to draw any women? Well, Elvis Presley and Paul McCartney, they draw women.
I mean, that's the other thing that fascinates me, though. You're still married, right?
Yes.
Well,
I know why people always say that word still, well, like it's something that's not supposed to be.
I'll tell you why, George. Last week, my wife and I celebrated our 31st anniversary, and you've been married 33 years, and I just don't associate that with rock stars. I have great admiration for it, but it's often not the life of the rock star to be that stable. I think it's very
probably
cool.
Because that's because a lot of rock stars were just motivated just by women.
Right. Okay.
They couldn't probably handle the scene of just being with one. So that was in their DNA makeup to begin with.
Yeah.
Who knows?
I don't know. And my wife and I have three daughters. I know that you have a beautiful daughter, and I found this little video of her performing with you. I think this is from a couple years ago, but that's got to be an incredible thrill. This is her, right?
hey, man, I get an incredible thrill with my daughter, whatever we're doing.
Yeah. Yeah, but, I mean, this is her on stage with you, and I'm thinking that's got to just be incredible to share your passion of music and your passion of family. That's got to be a pretty impressive trait.
Well, you don't have to use your imagination for that, let me tell you.
Yeah. Who is still, I mean, I saw Rod Stewart a couple of months ago. Who do you still, from your era, love that they are still performing and killing it?
About 2.5 weeks ago, we saw Tom Jones. He was badder than ever. Fantastic. And a week before that, we saw Eric Burdon, who's still delivering.
Yeah.
Well, about a year and a half ago, we went out to the desert and saw Dylan, the Stones, Neil Young, The Who, and Paul McCartney. And they're all really impressive. So, you know, it's very hard for me. It's not hard, but it takes a lot of work to get out of the house, get tickets, and go places and see things. So I only go see the best of the best.
Yeah.
And people that I know that are going to deliver, because just like any other fan, you know, next to your health, your time is your biggest commodity. And I don't want to waste my time or my money going to see someone who's just going to, you know, not deliver.
Yeah, and so,
but like I said, what's that?
What do you think's the common link? Because you still kill it. I mean, I know how hard you work on stage, and I know what you deliver. What's the common link between the guys who had, you know, impressive catalogs back in the day and no longer can get an audience versus you and the Stones and McCartney and the guys who still bring it?
Well, I would say that the passion to please people is what it's about. I mean, I could see the Who and the Stones were, although they were enjoying what they were doing, but you could see they were working for the audience to turn that audience on. And so was McCartney. And that's where it's at. Yeah, the thrill and the passion was still there. But I think the common link is when you wake up and think, how many people are going to make happy tonight? I know people keep saying, well, what's this going to do for you? So wait a minute. Carlos Santana set me straight years ago. This thing isn't about you. It's about the people who come to see you. You're a fan, aren't you? And I said, yes, I am. So I expect the same thing that people expect from me. And I just get it down to those basics, and then it makes things simple, you know?
Yep. I know you're a baseball guy. I think it was Ted Williams who said he goes so hard every game because it might be a kid seeing him for the first time. And I know you probably live by that.
Joe DiMaggio said something to me once when I got to hang out with him for a couple hours. He said, George, you only owe your fans one thing. And I said, what's that? He said, your best.
That's what you deliver every time.
That's it. That were orders. That was orders from the Yankee Clipper.
Yeah, yeah. If he's giving you advice, he'd be a good one to take it from. Well, George Thorogood and the Destroyers, they're going to be at the Emerald Queen Casino coming up on July 8th. You can get tickets at Ticketmaster.com. You can also get more at GeorgeThorogood.com. George, I love having you on the show, and I really appreciate you coming on with me today.
Rock and roll never sleeps. It just passes out.
All right. George, take care. All my best.
Bye-bye.
The great George Thorogood joining us. I drink alone. Oh, he's the man. I love talking to him. And we have lots more to come here on the Dory Monson Show. One of the more ridiculous controversies surrounding politically correct language is now going to go to court. You may remember, we played these cuts for you when it first happened. A broadcaster named Doug Adler, he worked for ESPN. He was a tennis commentator. And he was doing a Venus Williams match one time. And Venus was just playing her usual overpowering style of tennis, and she was attacking the net. And there was a classic Nike commercial about gorilla tennis. Not the animal. Like gorilla tactics, like warfare tactics. GUERRILLA. And it featured Pete Sampras and Andre Agassi. Gorilla tennis. Well, as he was calling this match and he was watching Venus and how she was attacking the net, Doug Adler said this on the broadcast.
And you'll see Venus move in and put the gorilla effect on. Charging.
And as I said, there was already that term, gorilla tennis, from a Nike commercial. Well, people heard that, and they thought, what? That broadcaster just called an African-American tennis player a gorilla? And no. He said a different word, gorilla, the military tactic. And so now ESPN fired the guy. He went on the Today Show right after he got fired, and Matt Lauer read the ESPN comments.
ESPN says to this day they're not 100% sure which word Adler intended to use. They deny all the allegations in the lawsuit, telling us, quote, Adler made an inappropriate reference to Venus Williams for which he felt no apology was necessary. We disagree and stand 100% behind our decision to remove him from the 2017 Australian Open. A representative for Venus Williams declined to issue a comment.
Okay, so Doug Adler now has just been granted his day in court. They denied ESPN's motion to dismiss his lawsuit, and Doug Adler says now ESPN just killed him for no reason.
They killed me. They made me unemployable. They ended my career. They killed my reputation, my good name. What else was I supposed to do?
And the man, understandably, is still angry because it really did destroy him professionally.
I hope so. I'm trying to live without it now. I agree there is a great degree of anger there. And I'm not happy about the anger. And until I think that I've proven fairly that I didn't do anything wrong, I think it's going to sit with me.
So again, just got word ESPN's attempt to dismiss his lawsuit was tossed out. So he's going to get his day in court. But it just shows the insanity of political correctness where somebody uses a word correctly, it's grossly misinterpreted, and a man loses his career because of it. Oh, we've got some huge breaking news. Big lead of two next.